being in the private sector for a few years now, being out of the political game, you can't stand it, right? You can't help yourself. You got to get back into politics. Why the Texas Senate?
Okay. It's because I think it's probably the best public policy job that you can have, certainly in the state and maybe the nation. Because if you've got a successful business, like I built here 5 years later after the tax office, you can do a part-time citizen legislature, you know, legislative position.
Right.
And I'm really a public policy guy. I always have been. And so that's what really is attracting me to run for Senate, primarily as a property tax and budget and numbers guy. I see that there could be really some excellent public policy debates coming up in 2015 that it's better to be voting on as opposed to trying to, you know, influence other votes.
Tell me about what some of those are going to be in your estimation.
Well, I think one of the key ones, and I think everyone in Austin would expect this, I think Judge Dietz is going to throw out some portion of school funding. Now, how much of that survives through this Texas Supreme Court, I don't know. One of the areas that I expect that would be thrown out at Supreme Court level would be the would be specifically the holding harmless of the school districts back to a 2006, basically, you know, everybody's pegged back to a 2006, you know, ratio, when the, especially the fast growth school districts have accelerated away from those numbers. And at the same time, you've got Robinhood pressure on Houston Independent School District and Dallas Independent School District, because they're, by the time we get there, going to be very close to their Robinhood limits. So that's something that actually I'm really interested in helping out on.
What do you think is the key question there? I mean, if you expect that it'll be thrown out, at least in large part, what will the legislature then need to do?
Well, I mean, it's a Ouija board right now because you can't read the judicial order before it's actually written.
Right.
You've got basically, you know, plaintiff groups that are saying that this current school funding is unconstitutional, is not sufficient, even after the legislature restored about $4 to $5 billion worth of funding. Now,
well, 3.8.
Yeah, right. Okay, sorry. That's right. Well, there's some extras on the balance sheet and stuff coming after the session, but more importantly, since you know the numbers, you know that that debate never ends.
Right.
Okay.
Well, the pattern is, right, legislature sets funding, school districts sue, a judge rules, and then we do it all over again.
Right, and then the wheel turns over and we go again. But about once every 10 to 20 years, there's actually a real reset because there's a major Supreme Court ruling. And I think that it's going to be, while not the biggest ruling on school finance, I think it's going to be a substantial one.
This will be a big reset for
It's going to be a big reset in 2015, probably. And so that's something that I would like to be part of. I mean, I've got some ideas that I know is unusual for conservatives, but I've met Well, I mean, I'll explain. I've met so many teachers that shell out of pocket for an audiovisual aid, okay? Something they buy their own out of their own pocket. Look, we can figure out a way to get everybody $20 so they can, I mean, I know it sounds trivial, but it's like if we've got good teachers spending their own money.
That shouldn't happen.
That shouldn't happen.
Right.
And we should find a way to get real money to them. And I know that we're under a lot of handcuffs about, you know, on school equalization formulas and trying to make sure that the WADA calculations and everybody comes out to the penny. But there are things that we should be doing, especially in the 21st century, to help the teachers get to the kids heart, mind, and soul about why education is important. And those are the solutions I'm going to be looking for.
Interesting. Now tell me, what do you think some of the other big issues are going to be that we'll have to tackle in the 2015 session? One, of course, in my estimation, and I'm not alone, will be coming back to transportation. We'll have just had a vote on a small piece, right? Do you think that there is maybe a concern there that people might think, why is the legislature dealing with transportation? Didn't we just vote on that? Didn't we just fix that?
It's, let me tell you, this whole idea of having the Prop 6 vote 1 year and then the transportation vote the next year, I don't think was good public policy.
That bothered you.
Right. And now, Prop 6 passed overwhelmingly, 75-25. I supported it because there's when you understand how the budget works up in Austin, mm-hmm. there's money that's effectively locked in there. Okay. I mean, you can pull the $2 billion out and dole it out on basically loans, and assuming it's going to get paid back, you can make that type of change because of the way the budget works and the difference between the accrual and the modified accrual accounting that they have. And I don't want to get into all the technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that transportation piece, you know, it's a year out and you're looking at, you know, forecasting a year in advance. People are going to be far more cranky when we get closer to the 14 than they were in 13, mm-hmm. primarily because the insurance situation nationally is destabilized. And so you know that that's going to be a driver in these elections. But more importantly, it's a driver in how people feel. How are they doing? What, you know. So another solution that could have passed a year before or maybe a year after may not pass in 2014.
Right.
And so all of this is still fluid because we're still over a year out from the session.
Yeah. Tell me what you see as far as what we keep hearing about the changing landscape of Texas. Where you're running for Senate, not a big problem. That's right. A Republican district,
sure.
And that's just the way it is. But as far as the rest of all this talk with the battleground Texas and the hype over Wendy Davis and whether or not that's really going to materialize, is that a real thing now? Or are Democrats still going to be waiting a couple of cycles, in your estimation?
There's no question they're going to be waiting a couple of cycles. It's the hype is there, okay? Mm-hmm. But part of it is that because of the Supreme Court ruling on the abortion law, and it's going to be backed up by the same House Bill 2, it's going to be backed up by the same ruling on a Mississippi statute that they're actually hearing oral arguments today on in the Supreme
mm-hmm.
Court.
Right.
That kind of takes Wendy's issue away from the standpoint of being able to make any fundamental change. Now, also, it means that she gets the negative of the fact that she really is on the other side of the issue for the average Texan, including all Texans on average, okay, Hispanic population, et cetera, lean more pro-life than they lean pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or at least they would identify that way.
They would identify right. that way because mm-hmm. now there's, and I know where you're going because the difference between the identification
sure.
and the voting
yeah. mm-hmm.
pattern cannot be one-to-one correlation.
Right. Sure.
So what I see is that she is going to have, she probably has a better chance of winning the governor's race than she did winning her own Senate district.
Sure. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think about the community specifically that you'll be representing at Northwest Harris County, Cy-Fair area, and where do we get to? We start from here
Memorial City and I-10.
Yeah.
Go all the way up to, mm-hmm. through Jersey Village, through Cypress, mm-hmm. swing over to Tomball, and you end up right outside the ExxonMobil campus.
Right.
Okay, in Northeast Harris County.
A lot of change, though, in this area.
Huge growth mm-hmm. in new homes, mm-hmm. huge growth in appraised values, mm-hmm. huge growth in property tax issues, which, quite frankly, are all in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be looking at what I think are good solutions mm-hmm. for property tax relief mm-hmm. in the future, too, in legislation in Austin.
What kind of... We always hear that sort of generically, property tax relief. I mean, how can that really be borne out?
Well, I mean, there's been a debate about appraisal caps, mm-hmm. which right now for the average home, it's at 10%. But to lower that number requires a 2/3 vote of both houses,
mm-hmm.
which is very difficult to do in this type of time. However, there's an easier way, which is in the truth in taxation statutes, as tax rolls go up, there are actually limits set on when there's a rollback election, when there is petition drives, et cetera, and those can be modified because really what should happen is as tax rolls go up, tax rates should go down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were two good examples of that not working, okay? We have tax rolls for HISD and the city of Houston go up over 10%.
Mm-hmm.
The HISD trustees actually were gonna add tax rate increase onto it. When I attended, and as well as Tammy Betancourt from BOMA, the building managers,
mm-hmm.
we went, argued them down on their tax rate increase, but the city refused to lower it, even though they're getting $102 million, 10.6% more money in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So there are great examples of why those the that what's called truth in taxation is busted. It effectively doesn't tell anybody the truth. And what we need are some real limits that if you go over above, let's say, inflation and population, you have to take a positive vote mm-hmm. by the board to make sure that whatever, you know, city council or board of trustees, that you're really raising taxes and here's why you're doing it mm-hmm. and get people to understand that that is happening as opposed to just relying on appraisal creep.
Give me your take on the way the Obamacare debate has played out at the Texas legislature with the expansion of Medicaid. I've heard from groups across the spectrum, some that might surprise folks about you because where they are politically, that still want to be able to see the state draw down federal dollars that they say, look, we pay in, we ought to get it back, no matter what you think of Obamacare. Where are you at on that?
See, where that's interesting. When Perry first came out and said, we're not going to take the federal money, mm-hmm. he had a torrent of criticism, especially from people on the left. Mm-hmm. However, his reasoning about not wanting to spend 10, 15, 20 billion, who knows what the real number really is,
right.
okay, was logical at the time. Now, what's happened since then is with the debacle that Obamacare has become, okay, you look back on Perry's decision and people, I've heard from people that think, well, maybe it wasn't such a bad decision at this point. Because we really don't know what Obamacare is going to look like at this point. We've got executive orders per week delaying individual mandates, extending times, changing, all sorts of parts of the program. So when you look at the Health and Human Services budget, you at this point in time, I can't predict what the impact is really going to be in the next session. Because I'm not even sure what the law will be at this point. Now, there's also a very interesting twist. Because the Democratic majority in the Senate changed the cloture rule mm-hmm. down to 51, okay, it is possible and not inconceivable that bills will actually pass to change portions of Obamacare mm-hmm. because you don't have the 60-vote rule anymore.
Right.
Okay. So it's possible that we could see substantial changes in the program, especially as individual senators like Mary Landrieu mm-hmm. and Pryor and others are looking at an election.
Right.
They may decide to vote that the Republicans were right and the implementation by the federal Health and Human Services is so bad that it will require change. And if that does, any change at the federal level will dramatically impact what the state right. has to do or will want to do in the future.
Right, will dramatically change things. Of course, we've all seen the stories and heard personal stories from people who have been impacted by the way this has played out. But I did hear somebody say the other day, and I'm trying to remember who it was, but they said that the problem is not that they have something that's bad. Fundamentally, it'd be like saying that that nobody wants ice cream because there's not enough spoons. People are lining up to try to get this coverage.
Well,
people are trying to get coverage, but they've run into issues. And when you look at what's happened in California, for example, where they do have an exchange, it's worked. But in Texas, we don't have the exchange. So does anybody really think that enrollment wouldn't be better if the biggest state with the most uninsured people had its own exchange?
Well, just remember, the biggest state with the most uninsured people just canceled over 1 million policies. And they haven't signed up anywhere near the number to replace that yet. Now, also, when President Obama came out and said, hey, if you can keep your insurance, if you want it, you can keep your doctor. Mm-hmm. Well, the insurance commissioner in California said, no, that's not going to happen in California. We're changing because we've already got signed contracts at a state level. So they've got a far more rigid, really effectively close to single payer system in California. Now, our insurance commissioner wisely says, look, we won't let the market decide. And let people, the insurance company, decide whether to offer the cheaper plans or not. So with all of this, there's always public policy debate that mm-hmm. that needs to take some time to come out. Let me give you one thing from experience because mm-hmm. I think it's important. Everybody, in fact, here it is. Okay, you can't see it on your account. I mean, here. This is my award from TxDOT for coming up with the idea to do these stickers. Okay, which are vehicle registration pop-out stickers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first implementation of this, and Jerry Dyke was the director, they had a company, we did a website, and the website was too slow, too difficult to use by government, mm-hmm. too difficult to use by the customers. They shut it down, so the alpha site wasn't a success. rebooted it for the beta site, and what we use now in vehicle registration is this beta site. Mm-hmm. So I know that the problem right now is that the Obama website, the front end doesn't work.
Right.
Needs to be shut down. And Lord knows what the back end is going to be like getting the money mm-hmm. to the states or to the hospitals or the doctors involved.
Right. Interesting. Tell me your thoughts about how the Texas Senate works as an institution. You're a friend and someone I've worked with closely as well. Senator Patrick has criticized the two-thirds rule. He's been trying to move things toward getting rid of that. Of course, we mentioned filibuster rule changes at the federal level. But in Texas, you know, it's been said that this isn't just a partisan thing. I mean, this is something that keeps people from having to take votes that they don't want to take. This is something that helps to equalize things between rural and urban areas, between North and South Texas. You know, when we get into some of these water fights, it'll be fracking in South Texas versus green lawns in Dallas.
Rights is what it is. It's protection.
Right, and sometimes people end up in a minority when they may not expect to. So tell me what you think about how all that works.
Well, what's interesting about the debate, because now the national gauntlet has been thrown down. I thought the right solution before what happened in the federal Senate was to take the two-thirds rule and tone it down to 60%, because that's really what the federal Senate did in 75. And so a two-thirds vote is difficult to get, and especially mm-hmm. difficult with populist legislation, because mm-hmm. you can have a lot of special interests
sure.
line up against it.
Right.
So I thought the solution was going to be go from 21 to 19.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, with this current climate out of D.C., I'm not sure what's going to happen at this point.
Yeah.
But I think the blocker bill needs to come down from two-thirds and my guess is to 60%. And that was what I had spoken out before the change in Washington. But, you know, it's going to be really fascinating to see how cold of a wind blows out of D.C. after this.
Yeah, you say that, just so I've got it right, you say that that may happen. Is that what you want to happen?
What?
To go down to 60%?
No, I want it to go down to 60%.
You do right, want that. Do, okay.
Right.
All
right. I think that that's the right number long term, because mm-hmm. you don't, the higher that number is, the more unlikely it is to get legislation even heard. See, the difference between the two is that the difference between the two institutions is one was a refusing to cut off debate.
Mm-hmm.
What the blocker bill is, you can't even have debate.
Can't even start it.
Yeah. Right. So in some respects, I would think that a better strategy would be, well, you could start debate, but but the cloture rule at 60% would have been a better number. But any public policy solution is better than 21 votes stopping all debate. Okay, you can't even have debate. Forget it. Don't say stopping debate. 21 right. votes is you don't even get to bring your bill up. You don't right. even have a debate.
Right.
So I consider that too onerous, and that's too inside baseball. We need a system that's a little bit less, stringent than that to get public policy solutions debated. Because even if they're debated, they go down. That's okay too, because maybe the next idea is better than the one that just got voted down.
Paul Bettencourt, thank you.
Thank you.